ಚಾರ್ಜ್ ಏಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೀರಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ತರಬು ಬಾಕಿ ಆ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಸದ ಸಮೀರ ಭವತಿ ಆ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಸದ ಸಮೀರ ಭವತಿ ಆ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಸದ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುಂಗ During this Kartik, we took a simple topic, the chanting of the Lord's name, the Sri Harinam Chintamani. Simple, but a lot of significant and profound points. And we'll take two chapters every day so that we can finish in a week's time. Now, of course, our background here is with Krishna is appealing to Haridas. Haridas Thakur, to speak high philosophy and understanding about the potency and efficacy of the holy name. Now we notice that Krishna does this from time to time. He had Ramananda Roya to speak about what is the highest goals of life. And he kept asking him for something higher. Until finally he was explaining about, Madhurya Ras. And then we see that also in the case of Sarvabhauma, that Lord Chaitanya arranged through him to explain about liberation. And then we see also how Krishna, when he, in the Kripala Kurusetra, how he covered over Arjuna, so Arjuna would ask certain questions. But in this case, because Krishna was speaking himself, but still that combination was there. And here he's asking, in the case of like of Rupa Goswami, Krishna arranged to have him, to use him, to explain so much about the ultimate associations of the soul and the spiritual world, Rastattva, what leads from there to Abhideya, Prayojana, Sambandha. Abhidhyaya. And here, he's using Haridas, who's a Mohammedan, a Muslim. Now there's a lot of significance there, because it's showing how the holy name is not based on Varna Ashram, it's not based on the religiosity, it's not based on even time, place, and circumstance necessarily. The holy name is always there. It has nothing to do with caste. Matter of fact, it's the opposite. We see in Sattva Treta Dwapara that there were specific things of Yuga Dharma to follow. But see, in Kali Yuga, we don't do anything like so well. It's not so easy. And so where such perfection could happen from meditation, from temple worship, from austerities, etc., then in Kali Yuga it said that it's much more complex, much more difficult. So because of that, there is special weaponry that's needed to be able to penetrate such modes of material nature and such assaults on the mind and the senses on the body. And so it's understood, and Haridas explains, that this is why that the holy name becomes our greatest shelter, body in Kali Yuga. Whatever yajnas, whatever rituals we do, it is associated with, the holy name is associated with such. Often we begin through chanting, and we end in such ways. And we know that, like in Bhaktisiddhanta's time, the devotees were chanting 64 rounds. One would be considered fallen if they weren't chanting that number of mala. Prabhupada has given us an interesting dispensation to chant 16 rounds. And what does that mean? We're definitely fallen in Kali Yuga. Kala Sutra Sambhava. Basically, people are in the mindset of sutras. But it means how much the holy name is powerful and how much the carriers, the maintainers of the holy name, are powerful and merciful. They can even give us such minimal arrangements, and then they will cover for us with the holy name. what's really being said by Prabhupada is he's saying, now, here in Kali Yuga, fallen. People are so fallen. It's such far away from Vrindavan, such far away from the natural order of things. The technology and sense gratification in so many ways. It's created so much impersonalism and greed. And we see in even earlier times, just seeing a sinful person, one would go and jump into the Ganges and take bath because it was so contaminated. Now, every day, many times during the day, we have to be confronted with atheists, sinful persons, and we often have to associate with them in our work, and we do sankirtan, or we just do, you know, some various types of interactions. So then one may think, well, what is the hope? What is the hope if even Arjuna, of course he was, you know, in the Leela, but even in that, in his position as a powerful kshatriya was in some state of bewilderment. What is the hope if even Lord Brahma has his moments of bewilderment? What is the hope of even Indra, who is, I mean, Govardhan Puja, and other devas, if they sometimes become so disturbed, so bewildered by the ego, by their position, their status, that sometimes they even want to deny Krishna? Or what is it that even sometimes the demons become even stronger than them? So how we as tiny jivas can overcome such demons externally, or demons within our own mind, or our own senses? Well, that's some of the beauty of Krishna coming in the bhava of Srimati Radharani. That is the beauty of Lord Balaram himself coming as Lord Nityananda and coming with his chief cowherd boys. That is the beauty of Krishna descending with his shakis, his manjaris. That is the beauty of Krishna coming in this way, but he doesn't even come in every particular age. Or you see Mahaprabhu. That means a lot of Krishna consciousness has to do with how we honor our contract and Krishna does everything else. That is the power of Kripa Siddha. That is particularly encapsulated in Kali Yuga. That is the power of the idea of connecting with Guru. Vrija Masters is supposed to be a representative of Nityananda, or servants of Srimati Radharani. So an integral aspect of the Guru is to be the broker, to be the lawyer, to be the facilitator. That means that I can go back to Godhead because of being loyal to Srila Prabhupada, and at the end, Krishna says, oh, that's Prabhupada's man. Not so much that one becomes so expert in Kali Yuga, because everything we do is full of aparads, offenses, lack of proper faith, lack of intensity. Even in other ages it was so difficult. What does it say in Kali Yuga? But that is the power of being under the protection of Lord Nityananda's arrangement. Is that it's like you tell your child, so I will buy you a bicycle. You just have to wash the dishes for 3 weeks. And so the kid does her part of the contract, the duty, does her duty. And you're more than eager to arrange for the bicycle. It's not that the 3 weeks, a little work she did, was enough money to cover, even if you paid her, to cover for a bicycle. It's not even so important. But you just want her to do what you have asked, and therefore you are already arranging for what is needed, what you want to do for. So we try to maintain these temples. We do the different services. We follow the four rules and regulations, whether we're in the projects, whether we're at home, whatever. And Krishna now becomes obliged to do as he's promised. That he maintains what we have and carries what we lack. And he knows how much we lack in Kali Yuga. And the lacking is awesome. But how beautiful it is. It's like you have a child who's handicapped or a friend who's handicapped. And so there are so many limitations. But even though the handicap is there, you're still looking and appreciating what little they're able to do, and that is okay. Now, if they can do more, that's different. But Krishna knows what our genuine handicaps are. Now we're asked to carry out our side of the contract. And so we're giving 16 rounds of chant. We're giving 4 rules and regulations. We're to do some service. We're trying to be selfless. We're to try to share what we have. And Krishna will do. Lord Nityananda. Prabhupada said Lord Nityananda will have pity, will have mercy on such souls, and will allow them. So, in one sense, Krishna consciousness is extremely difficult because it's totally different from what we've been doing for many, many lifetimes while we've been under the Mahatapa. But in another sense, it is amazingly simplistic. As soon as we have more faith, we realize, wow, if I just wash the dishes for 3 weeks, mommy has already picked out a bicycle for me. It already has my name on it. Huh? If I just do what I'm being asked to do, I already have an eternal position, that's a service that I'll be doing in the spiritual world. When I leave this body, Prabhupada's mercy will just pick me up and bring me into service. Now I just have to do what is necessary, and then all of the things come together and fall in place. Let me just do what's necessary. But while that child is doing the 3 weeks of trying to wash the dishes, all kind of things come into the mind. And they go out and play. Look out the window, everyone else is playing. He thinks, I'll wash them more. I'll wash today's and tomorrow's tomorrow. Think of all kind of reasons, always to justify not doing that, to do something else. Then she gets behind. Or she thinks, I'll just take the dishes and put them under the couch, and mommy won't know that the dishes were not washed. She'll think they're put away in the cabinet. So the kid thinks of all of these things, and all she had to do was just wash the dishes, and the bicycle was there. Then after 3 weeks is over, the child's, you know, thinking she'd get the bicycle. And mother says, well, you know, there was 4 or 5 days that you didn't wash the dishes. And then she don't get a chance. She doesn't get a chance to get the bicycle. She put extra energy, into trying to figure out how to do something else when the energy could have been used to do the dishes, and then she'd have been happy that she had a bicycle. And the sad thing is that she was so close. So she was so close to getting, you know, to getting a bicycle. So this is what Kali is like, Kali Yuga. Is that we're just being instructed to do this, do that. It's not enough. Chanting 16 rounds, following the 4 rules and regulations, this is not enough to automatically give you the love of God. Matter of fact, we see that these 4 principles just help us to be healthy, pious humans. This brings us to the mode of goodness. It's not really a 4 rules and regulations take you back to Godhead. That's not real, you know. It's not real. It's not true. You know, if these don't have any planets, you know, they may follow all of these 4 rules and regulations. But in Kali Yuga, it is part of what we've been asked to do to situate us to be picked up. Somebody's coming in with a helicopter, and they're gonna rescue someone. And they say, so be in this part of the village, you know, by that big tree, we'll pick you up. So therefore, one is situated, and then the helicopter comes. You've done your thing, your part. Now the communication and the connection is there. So, in that sense, although Krishna consciousness seems overwhelming, all of these rules and regulations and things to do and things not to do, and you know, you got to try to be focused day after day, and you can be focused for 5 years and later you have trouble for 10 years, you know, it's like overwhelming. But then the other side is just like so simple, because it's just a matter of being loyal, and then we get the necessary assistance. Krishna will find ways to impact upon our consciousness, impose upon our consciousness to help us based on our genuine loyalty, knowing what our difficulties are, knowing what, you know, what our capabilities are. So this is particularly the reason why in this Yuga Dharma we are instructed to chant the holy name. Because our meditation isn't so wonderful that it can give us liberation and back to Godhead, like in Sattva Yuga. Our temple worship, our following rituals and things, is not so powerful that it would be able to in itself to take us back. It's also why we're giving all the ninefold things to do, when any one of the nine can take one back to Godhead. But in Kali Yuga, again, because they're not done so wonderfully, then the idea is that we're just being given what we're to do, and then it's up then to the agents of Krishna. So this is one of the reasons why there is so much of an emphasis, you know, by our various acharyas in this whole connection of disciple and guru relationship. Why there's so much emphasis on the fact of this idea of simplicity and humility. Because it really means just make yourself available, you can be brought back. Somebody's drowning and they're fighting and struggling so much, you have trouble trying to bring them in. But then they make themselves available and you just, you know, your lifeguard has expert skills and you bring that person in. So Haridas is exemplifying this, is that he is from an Islamic background. So he doesn't have high quality in terms of Nirvana and the ashram in that sense. But we know he has high quality because he's fully surrendered to Krishna. But how Krishna lets his Namacharya be one who is not even a Pukka, and coming from a Pukka Vaishnava family, not one who's a great scholar, etc. But he lets the Namacharya, that which is the Yuga Dharma for this age, be carried by one who is considered to be like an outcast. This is constantly showing us the Patita Pavana position, you know, the actual mercy that's there, and the power of the holy name. So just as Ramananda Roya was speaking such high things, to go higher and higher till he came to also the discussion about Radha and Krishna. Lord Chaitanya used him, spoke through him. Just as Sarvabhauma was able to explain many things in reference to liberation, as he was being empowered in such way. And just as Rupa Goswami was so much a servant and a puppet and being used to give so many things before humankind, present as well as in the future, concerning Rastabha and the ultimate connection or prayojana of the jiva. So here it says that Haridas was being used to share this message. Now there's such a sweetness in the scene as we read here, is that Haridas is just in awe. The Lord, you are the Adi Purush, you are the most magnificent, you're the most divine. All knowledge, all things are resting in you. How is it you're asking me to do something? And he says that Haridas, his tears is coming from his eyes, body is shivering and trembling as he embraces, you know, Mahaprabhu's feet. And the transmission of love and empowerment is there. And so he is humbled about the whole idea of saying something. At the same time, he is not blocking it, nor is he feeling that he has qualifications to do it, but he is just presenting himself, then you use me, you speak through me, etc. Well, Krishna could have did it directly, but he wants his devotee to be glorified. And he is coming through this medium, showing even more how his mercy is accessible, even though there may be seemingly so much lack of qualification. So this exchange goes on, seems like every chapter in the beginning and the end, where Haridas is in this mood of such love and affection that Mahaprabhu is with him and is asking him to do this, and he is just wanting to be available and to be used in such. And so the Lord is very pleased to be with his servant, and his servant is even more pleased to be with the Lord. And then they engage in this wonderful drama of presenting so many wonderful things as each chapter develops. So as we look at chapter one, let's maybe a little more background first. Remember Haridas Thakur, his case with the prostitute and also with Gopal Chakravarti. So in the case of the prostitute, as often happens, when someone is very dear to Krishna or someone is really trying in their devotional service, others become disturbed. The Mayavadi, the demonic class of people, they become the most disturbed. And we see in many other stories in biographies of the Acharyas that governors, kings, other pundits often try to stop them, attack them, defame them, etc. Because their existence is a botheration. And so we see this happen in the case of Haridas, where he was flogged in the marketplace because he would not give up the chanting of the holy name. He would not give up his identity. After all, he's the Namacharya. And how could he give up letting the Lord use him? How could he get up his realizations that were fully a part of him from many, many different pastimes? Now they just this one particular service that he's doing for Krishna. And then we see that Gopal Chakravarti, he was quite astute, very sharp on seemingly philosophy and yajnas. Just as a Brahmin, he was quite astute. But he was a smarta brahmana. And here, Krishna again showing the significance of purity and simplicity in Kali Yuga, that when the smarta brahmana, who was a tax collector, when he heard Haridas speaking at a state of Namabhas, clearing stage, that one could attain liberation. And his reaction response was, who's this sentimental, you know, preacher, sentimental Vaishnava, sentimental devotee? He's talking about even just at Namabhas that one can attain liberation. As his understanding was that after all kinds of austerities and knowledge and yajnas and activities, that one still may not attain liberation. So how is it this sentimental devotee is saying that one can attain? He's not understanding that this is Kali Yuga and the power of Krishna's mercy and his representatives in Kali Yuga. So he's missing the importance of the holy name, as carriers of the holy name. So the devotees, they were, of course, be disturbed that Gopal Chakravarti was speaking like this, and they pleaded on him to withdraw his statements. They did not want him to have to suffer. They did not want him to cause confusion, because he could have others thinking this way also, as he did. But he was so much into not understanding the mercy, not understanding the holy name, not realizing that all rastaba, all knowledge of spiritual world, all spiritual connection, all understanding of our original identity is contained, somewhat hidden, within the holy name. So to the degree how one serves and approaches the holy name determines how it becomes the key and unlocks the mysteries for the individual. And this is why we can sometimes struggle so much, because we can have that key and at the same time not open up the door, not open up the safe. We can have the key in our pocket. We can kind of lose it for a while. Sometimes we lose the holy name. We go to points where we don't even chant it, we don't even kind of think about it so much. And so although we have that key, and we don't experience what happens when we open up the treasures and open up the doors. We have the key, but we get so distracted by so many things. And after a while, we just kind of lose the key altogether. Sometimes we get so distracted by so many things that we're not chanting because our mind is too crazy. When the mind is too crazy, how can you chant? How can you hold on and capture and run with the mantra when the mind is running after all kinds of things? Sometimes we notice when we start chanting, many times it takes a while to kind of get into moving with the mantra. But sometimes you go to your whole rounds and you haven't really moved with the mantra. So you start getting ready to chant, then the Kali, the Maya jumps in, Sometimes the maya jumps in and it stays with you the whole, japa kriya. Especially if you're not able to, be more focused. That's why it's very difficult when you're chanting around, you're doing so many things. Then maya plays more tricks in keeping you from being really focused and harnessing, the connection. And when the mind is really, really strange, then you can't even chant 16 rounds. Sometimes one gets so much entangled that even if they had a block amount of time, they would not be able to chant. They will find different things to do just so they only chant 2 or 3 rounds a day, and that's it. And later they don't chant at all. Sometimes the mind gets so intense that even if you just have to sit down in the house, sit down in the temple, and just chant for an hour and a half, 2 hours, wouldn't be able to do it. We've even seen sometimes, you've all seen. You ask somebody to chant Hare Krishna and they can't. Another person is so sinful, you tell them, can you say Hare Krishna? And they can't. The name will not vibrate on their lips. Because the consciousness is just so gross, it's just blocked from the name, being able to be repeated in such ways. Then other times, people just right away say Hare Krishna. Or other times, you can just chant 16 rounds and you just with the mantra and there's no problem because you're not getting your mind too caught up in so many other things. You have been doing things that week, that day, the day before that you're okay with. And therefore, the mantra just, you go right with the mantra. Because then there's less obstacles and we're honoring moving along. It's like you're going to go with someone and you're not sure where you're going to go or you're not so happy about the person's association. So you go a little ways and then you stop. Or you're walking with them, but you're kind of thinking, oh, this person is a nonsense, this person is a moron, this person doesn't like me, I don't like this person. What this person is, it was ulterior motive. And so, although you're moving with the person, it's very uncomfortable. Or it's like you're calling somebody, in the other part of the farm or across the street. And you're calling them, or even better, they're calling you. And as they're calling you, they're speaking rough or foul. And even though they're calling your name, you don't feel encouraged to go over and see what they want. You feel almost the opposite. The way they're calling you, you realize this person doesn't have really good intention. They're saying like, hey, where is such and such? They call your name. Bali, Bali. even more so, where is Ekavir? Prabhu, have you... Where? Huh? Give me a think. I don't know. You don't feel encouraged. You don't feel encouraged, to present yourself. Because you realize the person is calling is an anxiety, is upset, is disturbed, may assault you, may offend you. And so you kind of think, I'm not eager. You act like you didn't hear. So we're calling, the holy name. And if we're calling in such a way, then how would there be smooth association and movement? There will be obstacles, stagnations, and such. So Haridas is helping us in many wonderful ways of seeing the power. When the prostitute came, and even though by human nature, one would be more prone to fall prey to such. And even though sometimes very powerful yogis who go through all kinds of austerity and many times all different types of shakti, but when it comes to the lust aspect and an opportunity, then they fall to it. Sometimes opportunity is not presented, they're okay. There are many, many yogis, especially in Kali Yuga, who come from the pilgrimage places or they're born even in Bhadrasa. And some of them have been Naisiki Brahmacharis, some of them have been engaged in rituals since birth. Then they come to America, they come to Europe, and they fall down, majority of them. Because what happens, even though that's there, without special mercy in Kali Yuga, there'll be a problem. They get overwhelmed by things of the Western world, overwhelmed by the exchange, because there's a different level of association with men and women in the West. And they get overwhelmed by the feminine energy, and more than not, They fall down. So, but Haridas, who was just simply focused on trying to serve Krishna, not only did not fall prey to the temptation, nor did he just try to avoid her, but he converted her, raised her consciousness. So this is the Haridas that we are tuning into, discussing some significant things with us about the holy name, why Krishna has asked him to share. It says in the first chapter that Krishna has two different kind of energies. He has he is Vibhu. This is his infinite absolute natures, and he has what is called the Vaibhava, or the chit potencies. So there is what is known as the chit Vaibhava, the eternal, and there's the achit or the Maya. So it's the achit Vaibhava or the Maya potency, and this chit Vaibhava is very similar to, as we analyze Krishna's energies, Antaranga Shakti, Tathashta Bahiranga. So the Bahiranga is the separated, that's the simplicity, that's the lower nature, the external nature. And basically, everything, all aspects of the up to the 14th planetary arrangement, the lower, the medium, and the higher, it's all ultimately a part of the Bahiranga, or it's part of the Vaibhava potency. These are the separated energies, the lower nature, etc. And then the jiva, of course, is marginal, but is really a part of the sutta, is part of the eternal, but temporarily is associating with mature energy. And the chit, or the vaibhava, eternal potency, antaranga, it is then categorized in three aspects. And that is, of course, the samvit, sandini, and the ladini. And so, what are those? What is the samvit, Krishna's samvit potency? How do we understand the samvit potency? What happens with that? Mm-hmm. Yes. It's the cognizant, the knowledge potency. And that includes all knowledge. That includes also knowledge of transcendence. It includes knowledge of impersonal aspect, in shakti. It includes knowledge of the variegatedness of the manifestations in the material world. They come in touch with the three modes, you know, material nature. It's all knowledge coming here into ultimately pure knowledge, eternal knowledge, etc. And then there's the sadini potency. How does that potency work? It's the existence, all-pervading existence potency that's there. So it's how things are combined together, how it's the sambandha, connections. The existence, the associations, in material, in the marginal, as well as the ultimate eternal activities, associations in the spiritual world. And then there is the ladini, potency. Krishna's ladini, what is that potency? Mm-hmm. It says, yes. Personification, we see, the pleasure potent, personified, ultimately in his highest expression, is Srimati Radharani. But all of these are part of his chit potencies that's coming from him as the vibhu, and then we have the maya aspects, the bahiranga shakti. Now all identity, I think the devotee from Philadelphia has explained it so nicely, how we can always look for tattvas, that everything is in tattva, and also based on based on nama, guna, rupa, and lila. So we can understand a person, can understand things based on its name, the nama. We study it to know something about its form, how it's presenting itself, how it's appearing. We understand something about the guna, or its qualities, and then nsi lila. So Haridas is explaining, and thinking that that Krishna is impersonal, or that is ultimately only about impersonal music connections, could not be wholesome, could not be complete. Because then where is the rupa? Where is the form? And where is the guna? Where are the qualities? You know? We may name it something, Nama may be there to some extent, but then where is the Leela? Leela involves the Rupa, the form. Leela involves the Guna, some qualities people can associate or things can associate, but there's something about the quality of that association or the kind of association. So all things can be looked at in terms of, as we try to analyze and evaluate, we can look for the Nama. How is it understood? What is its name? What is the way that it is vibrated and discussed and talked about? In that sense, look at the Rupa, how it is appearing in this way, and the Guna, and the qualities, and the Leela. Now that is also with us while we're in the material world, and we're in the prison house, but our Nama, Rupa, Leela, and Guna, and Leela, they are based on separated activities. They are based on connecting with the illusion. They are based on connection with the false ego. They are based on a certain kind of insanity. But the Nama, Rupa, Leela, Guna, these things are real. And we have such ultimate, real, permanent identity with the soul. So each soul, it has its particular Nama. All of our souls has, just think about that. Everybody's soul has its own eternal name. All these names that we're having, that people call us, nicknames, family name, all this stuff. We have thousands, millions of such names. But we do have an actual name. And it's not the name that we're using now. Maybe some rare case, but we have our own name. And we do have our own eternal form. So when you, it gives us a lot of solace. And knowing this body with these pains, this body that may be too fat, too skinny, too tall, too this, too that, that's not you. Huh? Just got a costume on for a while. Realizing that your Rupa is so gorgeous, so beautiful. Have you ever seen any pictures of entities in the spiritual world to be ugly? No. The nature of the soul is just, it's just full of beauty. In all regards, because everything is perfectly arranged. So they realize that, oh, okay, I'm dealing with this temporary baggage now, but I have to maintain it as best as I can so that I can be more and more focused on my real identity, so I can speed up letting my real presence come up. And then you think that we have eternal qualities, and others have eternal qualities. It's why we can be excited also as we think in association with devotees. We can bypass sometimes even some of our weaknesses and realize that this person, and even the karmis, you realize this person actually also has eternal qualities and eternal form, eternal, identity. And what they're doing, what they're thinking they are, is just something in the some small point in the passing of time. We can try to get beyond that ourselves and with others. That we have an eternal age. We don't have to deteriorate. Or the body doesn't grow old and begins to experience different kinds of difficulties. We don't have any kind of sicknesses associated with who we really are. We don't have any kind of periods of boredom or any kind of periods of loneliness. None of that has to do with who we really are. And not to mention about work and samadhi later. And then we think, another day, another week, another struggle. Another problem with creditors, another problem with my mind, another problem with my children, another problem with my family, another problem with so many things. Well, none of that is existing in our eternal associations. So Haridas letting us know, this is the potency of the holy name. It will unfold, it will reveal to us our Nama, who we are, who we are eternally known by. And those residents in the spiritual kingdom who know us in that way. We know ourselves. And it will reveal to us our qualities that are totally effulgent and pure. And it will reveal to us the associations, the leelas that take place, the things that we like to do the most for Radha and Krishna, and the things that they are reciprocating with us on. So all of this gradually unfolds as one hones in sufficiently to the holy name and lets the holy name do all the necessary, you see, cleansing. So then we find, I'll move on to maybe to the next section. Last few things in this first chapter is mentioned about Sukriti, that there is three different types of pious activities. And as you have, some of you have the book, so you can be reading, and my discussions will just kind of help maybe to refine what you already have read. There's one category called Kaman Mukhi, that is piety derived from fruitive activities. That's the first category. Second category is called Gyanon Mukhi, or that's piety derived from jnana, from cultivation of knowledge. And then, of course, there is Bhakshu Mukhi, which is piety derived from devotional service. So we have three categories: piety derived from fruitive activities, piety derived from knowledge gathering or processing, piety derived from devotional service. Now, in each case, there is some boon, there is some blessings. Each case, there is Sukriti. But, Jnana Sukriti. But obviously, the piety connected with devotional service is that which really helps to speed up the bringing forth of our original Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila. The other things, like, they kind of help to, you know, to facilitate, but not really to do, you know, the sufficient uncovering of who we actually are. And so there is, here he says, in Sattva Yuga, I'm sorry, move this here. Haridas mentions then that the primary process here for this age is chanting the holy name. The Lord's holy name is always present. Therefore, it is the most efficient process. When the means becomes the end, the process becomes identical to the objective. And thus it is easy for the jivas to attain liberation by your mercy. So Haridas is saying, one of the distinct differences that was not there in the other ages through the meditation and the ritual and temple worship is that in the Kali Yuga, the means and the ends are actually quite similar, and that is we're calling on the Lord's name, even though we are neophytes or gradually in the clearing stage, that this is the goal, that it's all there. It's all contained. It's like you have, sometimes people do this unusual thing. They give you a present, and they put it in a box, and then another box, and then another box, and then another, Somebody just sent me a present like that, a couple of days ago. And I was thinking, all the time it took in making these boxes, And then it's a little thing there, But it was fascinating just seeing the time and the care, for the box. It's like the box was, was a present of itself. And it was a mystery. The last box now, you open up, another box. Another box. That's why you start thinking, somebody's playing a game on you. There's nothing but boxes. You're just about ready to throw away the last box and you open up and something's inside, So the holy name is like that. Is that the gem is right there. And just a matter of unfolding. So the means in the end, that the conclusion is right there. But it is to be opened up and later to be, one can experience of such. So that is a gift. Is that although it's complex, you got all these boxes you really have to deal with, but the beauty is that the end result is with us in Kali Yuga, even more so. The holy name, we take shelter of it. Now in chapter 2, Bhaktivinoda, who's writing, mentions, taking birth in a low family and caste, you have proven to the world that Lord Krishna is not attained merely by amassing wealth, position, lineage, or refinement. Whoever has developed unflinching faith and unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord is factually superior to the demigods. You are learning all truths of the holy name. This is he's talking to Haridas. Your spiritual conduct is exemplary, and you are expert preacher. So Mahaprabhu is saying, so Haridas, you kindly reveal to me the unlimited glories of the holy name. Allow me to savor your words. Now, the purport goes on later saying how the most advanced Vaishnava is one who has a natural way of enthusing and reminding others to take shelter of the holy name. That as we really make the holy name ours and bathe in the holy name, then one of the things that happens is that one becomes electrified with the association of the holy name, becomes eager to share it, but just by just being around, that it will have its way to influence others to take shelter of the name or to connect with the holy name, you know, to some extent. Sometimes you can just see that in some devotees, they actually relish chanting so much that when you see them, it makes you think that you should be chanting. It makes you think you should be more attentive to chanting, you know, the holy name. There's some people when they chant and you hear their chanting, it's enchanting itself. It just captures you, you know. It makes you feel, my God, when will I have that kind of attachment that I can just really just dive and become intoxicated with the holy name? Huh? So this happens automatically when someone is very, very advanced, Vaishnava. When they do bhajans, they're chanting the holy name, it becomes so wonderful. When they are speaking about the Lord in different ways, one becomes excited, want to hear more. And when they're directly calling the Lord, you know, through the japa mala, it has an impact on the environment. Any object is known by these four characteristics. We described it already. Now he mentions, as he's wrapping up, about Krishna's 64 transcendental qualities. Because in this discussion, Haridas is making it clear not only about the potency of the holy name, but he's making it clear how and why Krishna, you know, is the Samambona. How Krishna has these different energies, these different manifestations, but all of that is coming from Krishna, you know, as the supreme supreme autocrat. So now we find that, and remember from Nectar Devotion also, of the 64 qualities that Krishna himself has in full, we know that the living entity has so many qualities. What's the number of qualities that the living entity has? Not 16, no. 50, yes. The living entity has 50, and not in totality, but 50 and some aspects of those 50. And then the demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they also have certain so many qualities of what Krishna has, but some they don't. How many qualities do they have? Yes. 55. But then again, even though they have 55, it's not in total. They don't have it fully complete as Krishna has, but they have 55, and they have parts, you know, some aspect of those 55. And then we see that special incarnations, like, you know, like Lord Ram, for instance, Lord Narayan, they have how many qualities? They have 60 qualities. So that means there's four very special qualities that nobody has except Krishna. Let's see what those... Anybody remember what some of those four qualities are? Yes. 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 No one else... We don't see Lord Narayan playing the flute. Lord Narayan take the flute, the gopis will beat him up. What? You're doing... Well, I'd be loving his flute. Cowherd boys would come up and kick him. Boom! Give up that flute. So, and that has a flute. What's another one? Yes. Any others? Huh? Yeah, let's see how Haridas explains it. He says, the performer of wonderful activities, pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. So, special childhood lila. In Vrindavan, we don't see that. And the other incarnations, plenary expansions. Two, he attracts living entities all over the universe by playing his flute. So a special arrangement of love and attraction, Krishna playing his flute. He is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. The others do not have that intensity of such associates, eternal associates to that extent, but they come in disguise. And last, he has a wonderful excellence of beauty that cannot be revealed anywhere in the creation. So even though it's the same Krishna who comes as Matsya Avatar, Koma Avatar, comes in the Sringadev, comes as Vamanadev, who comes as Narayan, and all of these wonderful plenary expansions, expansions of expansions, but none are as beautiful as the Lord and his bending form, playing his flute, and his form where he is in that reciprocation of giving such care and association to the cowherd boys, as we have in the picture back there, and also to his divine consort, Srimati Radharani. So, again, we see that we're all God, somewhat, the same in quality. We have different quantities, same in the sense that the essential things that are associated with the Lord is part of our own nama, rupa, guna, and lila, but not, of course, of the same exalted position as those who are having the 60 or the 64. But again, how close we are, that these qualities are within us. It's part of the soul. And to the degree that how much the Bahiranga Shakti is influenced, then to that degree, there's some dullness with these qualities. The conditioned jiva in contact with illusory material nature experience a state of consciousness diametrically opposed to Krishna. Because he identifies with his material body, therefore the jiva's name, form, qualities, and activities are all separate and different from his real self. Still has these things, but different from his real self. Of the four characteristic features, name, form, qualities, and activities, the Lord's holy name is the original because it awards the cognition of the other three. So here Haridas is making a very powerful point. He's saying, of all of these things, of eternal rupa, form, eternal name, eternal qualities, and eternal activities, that the chanting of the holy name is a primary religious activity of a Vaishnava because it brings awareness of all of the form. It brings awareness of the qualities. It brings awareness of the activities. So that means the rupa, the guna, and the lila is all based on the connection with the nam, with the name. So it's the holy name then that as we are able to connect with it properly and we're escorted by it, then it brings us to the conclusion of connection with our form and our qualities and now our eternal lila, our eternal group that we're associated with. Material nature has nothing more superior to offer than the holy name. In other words, in the material nature, whether it's the higher planets to the lower, is it not Brahmana, Bhuva, Oka, that the in this place of all the danger, that the jiva and the holy name are two most outstanding aspects because the jiva really is connected with the spiritual world. Now it's just temporarily, you know, undergoing some type of intoxication and amnesia because it's forgot its original identity. But the jiva and the holy name, Gola Kera Premadana, Harinama, Sankirtan, all really from spiritual kingdom. So Haridas is saying, all these things in the material world, all secondary, all a part of the prison, distractions, but the holy name and the jiva, they are the real solace because the jiva just has to be uncovered and the holy name has to be uncovered and therefore the treasure is right there even though it's hell. Even though in hell there is the treasure. Even though many boxes, we get to the point, open up to the last box, it is there. So Haridas is letting us know just how powerful that the holy name is. That it is the factor that brings open to the form, the qualities, and the lila. And it is the key that even though we are in the prison, that We do have an original identity. It's with us. We do have the means of how to escape. We have the key. And so he's saying, this is the significance. The holy name is, in fact, such key. Then he says the holy name can be categorized in two types. We're coming to our conclusion now. Principal and secondary. Now, what are some of the principal names of Krishna? It's considered Krishna has some principal names or primary, and he also has some secondary names. Huh? Yes, Damodar, Govinda, Sarananda. So we see these principal names are names dealing distinctly with Krishna's, you know, antaranga, his eternal leelas, and his eternal associations with his devotees in the highest exchanges. But now there are also other names that are secondary, that are also describing the supreme, but in a different way. What's some of his secondary names? Yes, what is it? Vishnu, Ishvara. They would, Vigatiya, would they be primary? Be secondary? Secondary? Allah, yes. All these kind of names. They're talking about the God, talking about the Aishvarya, but they're talking more in terms of his involvement with his creation, rather than his involvement in his eternal association with his eternal associates, where there is no, what do you call it, disguise about the rupa, the lila, and the guna, etc. So now there's some difference also in the potency, whether we're calling the primary name or the secondary name. We say, you know, you just call the name of God, any name of God. Yes, but there's also a gradation. There's a difference. It's not that chanting Lord Narayan's name is the same as chanting the name of Krishna, or not that chanting Ram is the same. Potency is there, but there is, you know, there is an actual difference. So then Haridas is giving us the direct name of the Lord to chant. Realize, honoring that Krishna is supreme in many ways, many pastimes. Now, last thing here we have, it's called what brings about disruption, or what causes offenses. And he gives two types. The first type is called Varnavya Vadha, or just called disruption in the syllables. And he gives an example in Bengali, Hatikari, where the first symbol is Ha and the last symbol is Ri. But somehow the Taka interferes. So even though you have the holy name when it's separate, but the whole word, the letters separate from it being Hare or Krishna. Then he gives the example of the separation based on philosophical conclusions, that there can be some interference in how one is philosophically understanding the holy name. Because of that, it makes a separation. One doesn't get the full benefit from the holy name. He says the second type of vavadhana is called tatavadvadhana, or disruption in the philosophy or conclusion. This is a very heinous offense. Lord Krishna's name and Lord Krishna himself are non-different. So he gives the example that there are those who, like the Mayavadis, who think that Krishna's name and he are actually different. And so even though they're chanting a holy name, they're not connecting with it, they're not running with it, they're not taking full shelter of it, they're not realizing how the holy name is Krishna descending into the world, and it's just a matter of uncovering, you know, Krishna's full presence. It's not, and I realize that the holy name is fully giving us our original nama, name, our rupa, form, our qualities, guna, and connecting us with the eternal activities of our soul, of other souls, in connection with Srimati Radharani and also Krishna. So this is our discussion for today. So we're looking at first Haridas's course, his background, and we see that he was coming forth in an Islamic family, which was, you know, showing that in Kali Yuga, Krishna's mercy, Lord Chaitanya's, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is indiscriminate, and they are ready to help and use anyone who is ready to be used in such, even though it may be unusual, it may be unorthodox, that Krishna will come through. And then we see how the different kind of energies are there, but ultimately we want to be less attracted to the separated energies, focus more on what is eternal for the soul, and be excited that this is, we know constantly from the nectar devotion, we must do all the things in a way to avoid the offenses, avoid the misconceptions, and avoid running from Krishna's mercy and guidance. And so he's given us Haridas, and Haridas is being very humble, as he is in awe, oh, the Lord is asking me to do this, you know, who am I? In the same way the Lord used Ramananda Roya, same way he used Sarvabhauma, same way he used Rupa Goswami, now he's using, and he used each of them for presenting something special. That's a part of his mission, and to give blessings to the people. And so he's using Haridas in this sense. But his Haridas was much greater than yogis and devas, because even they fall prey sometimes to some of the kind of temptations that were imposed upon Haridas. But he did not change in any sense, remained fixed. Then we have the different names, primary and secondary. And so, again, Haridas is giving us primary, giving us right connection with the source. So we'll stop there. Any questions or any comments anyone has? Mm-hmm. To the jiva.
Is that from just a lack of practice, or is that from committing offenses, or why does that happen to someone?
It's the same. Is that our chanting becomes more complex, more difficult, even boring, because of offenses. And offenses happen because our practice is not proper. So both things are similar. Because of improper thinking, improper desires, improper actions, we make offenses, we make mental offenses, we make verbal, we make physical. That interferes with our connection with the holy name. That causes us to call someone, but calling them in a vulgar manner. And so we don't get so much a deep connection and taste and benefit from the holy name. And so it goes both things, our consciousness and our actions, or our consciousness and our habits. Yes. I mean, we just can notice sometimes when we are chanting better, we look and see what's going on in our mind and our habits. And we'll find that we're less angry, sad, disturbed, bothered by whatever. Just notice how hard it is to chant when you're just thinking so much about your bills. It becomes a lot harder. How hard it is to chant when you're angry about something. How hard it is to chant when you're feeling lusty. How hard it is to chant when somehow there's some things in your mind that's causing you not to be able to focus. It becomes harder. Then notice when you're able to chant better, even though you got all these issues, somehow you just leave them outside. You come into the temple, and you just leave it. All your problems, you just kind of let them be on the shelf for a while. You know, because problems are always going to be there. And you just move along with the holy name. And then, feel much more protected and energized. When we have a good day of chanting, we'll notice that our whole day seems to be so much better. Even when there's social things that are not going so well, you're not bothered by them to the same extent. Many times we get more anxious, more agitated, and this or that, and we look and we notice we've been going days and days and days, and we haven't been having quality chanting. And so it's as if we're going out, without sufficient protection, without our batteries being charged. You see? Yes?
Yesterday you were talking about not being judgmental. I have a very judgmental nature.
No, that's not what I said. I was saying that we are to be judgmental. Yes.
Tell me the difference between being judgmental and discerning, discernment, because you should be discerning about how, about what association you should take or who you should, who you associate with.
Well, you should look and see, am I judging to see how I can serve this person better? Am I judging to try to see how I can learn how to be a better servant from watching others who serve nicely? Am I judging to try to see what my role is in producing some problematic situations? Am I judging to see how I can be more available, either directly or indirectly, to help that person's Krishna consciousness? So then that is wonderful. But if I'm judging in the sense that I'm just trying to see what a person's faults are, their weaknesses, what they're not doing as well as I'm doing, or what they're doing not so good, so I can say, well, I'm doing it also, because everybody else is doing it like that. If I'm judging because I'm really trying to support my illusions, then that's improper, and that's unfortunate. You know, if I'm judging because I want to hurt someone by finding something about them, and I'm judging because I want to not think so good about this person, so I'm trying to find some reason to justify why I'm treating this person in this way. Just got to look and see. I must be looking to see how to serve, looking to see how to help, looking to see how to support this person with their success or with their difficulty. Either way. That means just as much. You're looking to see somebody successful, and you're looking to see how to honor their success and be happy with them as they're doing this, doing that. Somebody's struggling, looking to see how, what role can I play in somehow helping to relieve this person from some of their issues, some of their problems. So it's maybe better than saying judging is that we should always be looking to care, looking to serve. Because judgment sometimes just means a certain thing to us when we hear that word. But we're always to be watching, observing, attentive, monitoring, concerned about our actions, what the effects it has on others, concern about others, so that we can have quality association. We can learn more from others who are a little more expert in this area, that area. So it's just a matter of eagerness to grow, eagerness to serve. Any last question? Oh, Egbert, you had a question?
You were explaining how this process, it completely depends on the mercy that we get from Krishna and Lord Nityananda. So what's the quickest way to get their attention?
Greed. You know, you could talk about this in many different angles, but one way to discuss it is spiritual greed. Not spiritual lust, not spiritual opportunistic mindset of wanting to get and to not to be concerned how you may affect others, but it means genuine spiritual greed. And you simplify that by, how do you get anything? Huh? You want something in the material world, how do you get it? You have greed, you think about it, you strategize about it, you see what opportunities are available, and you find ways how to come closer and closer until you get it. But there's a constant meditation. There's a constant anticipation of what you're going to have and what you're going to do with it. And so there's a meditation you have on such which keeps you determined until you get it. We have to have that. And even more so, that greed of knowing something is wonderful. You know something is really wonderful and you want it. And you manage somehow to keep yourself in line so you can get it. We all have some things from time to time in our life that we just want. And it may not always be so easy. But we find a way how to connect with it. And even if we don't get it, we try like anything to get as close as possible to being able to get it, because it's something that's really important to us. And when it's not so important, even the most little, slightest obstacles can cause you to give up, because you don't want to do it anyway. Somebody, you know, tell you, you know, they want you to do this service or something. And then it rains for 5 minutes. And you think, oh, I can't do it. The weather's bad. Can't go. You call a person. I won't be able to come over. But you were just waiting for a chance hoping that something would happen so you could say, then I won't be there, I won't do it. So often we lose determination because we really don't want to do it. We're just waiting for an opportunity, and something comes up and we say, yes, I can't do it. I'm out of here. Can't do this. Because we're waiting for an opportunity. And Krishna will give us many opportunities. Krishna will give you just the thing. I explain many times. Sometimes he gives you wealth, sometimes he gives you poverty, sometimes bad health. My whole life, my eye give you something to see if you want that. Well, one of the ways we get it is we're trying to do now. We try to read more about what we have been given so we can try to honor it more. We go deeper into the books, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, go deeper into the Bhagavatam, we go deeper into the works of the Acharyas, we go deeper to kind of begin to think about what is this that is our goal? What is this that's really available? And what do people experience when they have acquired that? And then we become so much excited and realizing, wow, this is something wonderful, and I also want it. If we don't hear more about what is available, we'll get distracted based on what we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And it can be pretty awesome. You can lose determination. If we don't allow the holy name to come with us, we don't move with it, we won't know how wonderful that it is. If we don't have less attraction to temporary things, we won't have any desire for anything primary. We'll be too occupied with just temporary things. This is why one of the qualifications for acceleration is also based on a certain disgust or detachment, towards status quo. Now the problem is, what happens with people who really have too much attraction for material nature? Will you tell me? That's right. They're miserable. They're losers. Huh? They're sufferers. Because they are identifying with the suffering. So they're going to suffer. We know that too much aversion, like attraction, we don't have to be excessively, telling them we hate this. But there has to be a natural mood of disgust. Or a natural mood that, I don't have a desire for that. I don't want that. And as that's there, then that we have the facility then to connect with our original Rupa, Nama, Guna, and Lila. Otherwise, we're connected with all of these illusory things, a part of the drama, then our Rupa, Nama, Guna, Lila is connected with that. And we're absorbed in such. So Krishna himself sometimes arranges to do what? Sometimes he arranges to make material life miserable for us so we move away from it. Sometimes he specially intervenes and he makes all of our plans fall apart, our material plans. And sometimes the devotee has to do that. There are many devotees who they come and they're young, they come to Krishna consciousness and they think they're going to become a pure devotee in 6 months. 7 months they lose their enthusiasm. By the 8th month, they're just totally drained, bored, what they're going to do. So sometimes, even after a few years, they will leave, they will bloop, and they'll go heavy into sense gratification. And they'll just drink, and they'll do all kind of things that people are doing out there. And then they'll think, big deal. They'll realize, I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied. I'm bored as anything. And all people are talking about is money and their problems and everything is material and where is the prasadam and where is the deities and where's the festivals and where's the devotees? And then you think, what am I doing? There are hundreds of devotees who had to go through that before they realize, wow, the devotees are my real family. You go home and you're with your relatives who are not spiritually inclined. And after a little while, you are bored like anything. You wonder, what am I doing? All they want to do is watch television 7 hours a day. They eat abominable things. They sleep for 14 hours. They complain about everything. Sometimes they don't even bathe. And you wonder, what am I doing? You're in the kitchen trying to cook something, and they come in and take something out of the pot. You know? I mean, you know, for them, it's not a, you know, it's what they do. You know? You're trying to, you know, you're trying to do RT, and they're coming in the room, making all kind of noise. They got the radio on, they got this, that, you know? And you think, what am I doing here? But sometimes people have to experience that. Or then they do another extreme. They think, okay, I'll just get an apartment, I'll live by myself, and I'll be peaceful, you know? And that is just dimming the walls. I mean, you got to have association. You got to have relationship, you know. First, you can be in that house. You can go 5 days and you can sleep 14 hours, you know. And after a while, and you eat 7-8 times a day, whatever you want. You just snack all day long. You go, oh, this is life. And after a week, you're fried. I mean, but sometimes one has to do that. One has to have some of these experiences to realize why we accepted devotional service, what we want to do. See, this is one of the reasons why the Vedic system was so designed to kind of carry people through so many experiences. You know, at early age, say for instance, one would be in the guru's ashram, brahmacharya for instance, and then later they take the grihastha life, they deal with so many different issues, and then later vanaprasth, and later sannyas. And so by that time they've kind of moved through different relationships, economic development, they produce a little one, a few who look like them, you know, a little dasi, a little das. And so they've done everything. And so it's at a point now where, all right, they've struggled, you know, with economic development. They have engaged in, you know, the orthodox scheme of things. And so now, when they take the Krishna consciousness in a deep way, it's actually very deep because the mind is not going back so much and thinking, well, I really should have been a scholar in a university, or I really should have been able to, you know, be rich and have a big mansion. I really should have been able to just travel all over the world and do this, do that. But, you know, they've kind of done so many things, and when Maya tries to kick in, they just kick Maya right out because they know what that really leads to. And this is why we find sometimes we have, you know, sannyasis who are like 50 years old and now they're looking for a wife. Because Maya then kicks in and Maya says, oh, this experience that you missed. Or why we have someone who now gets enamored, you know, by money, you know, and then they become unprincipled sinner, they become deviant, you know, just by money. Or so many other things. Because there's still so much taste for such. And so hopefully one has burn that up in a previous lifetime. Devotees who are very fixed, they get special mercy, but in most cases, they have been there, they have done that in a previous lifetime. You know, they've hung out, you know, in the subterranean heavenly planets. They've hung out, they've had a chance, you know, to be, you know, like a deva, sub-deva. They've been an apsara, they've been a gandhava, they've been a vijahara, they've been in the Himalayas, they've been in Rishikesh. I mean, basically, when somebody is really, really fixed, majority of times, they have paid their price, they've paid their dues, and they really don't have much genuine affection for so many things. And so in the back of their mind, what they really want, they want something higher. And other things they can participate in, but they really won't feel satisfied. But somebody who does becomes too attracted, and they're thinking that I just have to become a famous musician. And they're really into it. They have great greed for that. And they really won't be happy that somehow they've been through that, they've burned that out, and it may take, you know, many lifetimes before they have that experience. Now, the mercy of the Holy Name and the mercy of Kali Yuga is that Lord Nityananda, knowing that people are so unqualified, so many attractions, that if somehow we just take shelter and just keep telling our mind, just get away and go on, then we'll get additional credits to move through these kind of things. Or if we just try to associate with those who have more fixity, more taste, then we also gradually get the taste. We can all see some of our own weaknesses. That there's some devotees who are more fixed. If we can somehow not make offenses, if we can somehow not be envious and take their shelter of those persons, we'll find that it will increase our own quality and we'll become less attracted to other things. The opposite of that, you were some devotees who have amazing fascinations and attachments for certain things of sense gratification. they bring out or they put fuel to your little flame, and you start becoming more, let me say, addicted to that sense gratification also. This is the power of association. Some devotees completely gave up intoxications. But then they kind of associate with some fringes, whole little intoxication here and there, and because they have some small desire for that, now that association brings out the lower passion and desires, and that starts coming out, and they start going back into that kind, you know, of lifestyle. Association is very, very important, because there are many things that are dormant. The higher bhakti is dormant, and the past sense gratification patterns are also dormant, and they can come out one way or the other. But if we have the sufficient greed, and we are realizing what's available by constantly reminding ourselves, and that's why hearing and reading is essential. If we're not hearing and reading, in time we will lose sense of direction. If we're not, we'll lose desire to chant, and we'll lose desire to act. We'll lose desire to say no to Maya, and we'll say yes to Maya. And in this day, with the technology, there's no reason why a person can't be more absorbed. If you can't read, because there's so many books that's out now, then it's so easy now to have Prabhupada, have the guru, to have great, have many devotees right there with you. You know, you're listening by tape, and now we have videos. I mean, there's so many ways that earlier times people did not have so much. Even earlier times in the movement, we only had, you know, one or two books. Now we have the Veda base. You can research almost anything you want, you know, if you have a computer. And you have so many devotees who've gone through so many experiences that you can tune into. I mean, there were times in the movement when somebody was considered senior, and the age, they were only like 26, 27 years old, you know? There were times when most of us were like 18, 19, 20 years old. And a person that considered to be, you know, quite senior, mature, was like just 26 years old. And had only read maybe the Bhagavad Gita, and the Shusha Upanishad, Easy Journey of the Planets, and, you know, a couple of the Bhagavatams, and that was it. Now we got devotees who read the Bhagavatam, you know, 7, 8 times, you know. I mean, it's amazing. We got devotees who know Shastra, you know, it's like they know the ABCs practically. I mean, we have some Brahmins in our movement who can just quote from one verse and one book to another book. I mean, it's amazing. And so there's no reason why we can't have more availability, we can't take more shelter of Scripture. And, you know, of the process. But if we don't, then it means that we still have too much attraction for the temple, right? So we either have to pray like anything to Krishna, please help us to be freed of these desires and be ready to let loose and let Him help us, or we just have to act upon Him and hope that we don't get stuck before we can change, before this life is over. We just have to go and just do whatever the senses and the mind is saying, experience that, until we get it out of our system with the idea of now we can have a clear consciousness and we can chant and associate and really appreciate the devotees. Some people appreciate the devotees the most. Of course, it's those who have, you know, stronger bhakti, but also some of those who were away from devotee association for extended periods of time. And then when they have it, they really realize, yes, this is my real family. Or just to be away. For instance, now, some people are not chanting so well. Now, what if your beads were taken away and you were put in a situation where you actually could not chant? You're under confinement, or you're some situation where you cannot chant. You would be so much thinking, I just wish I had my beads, wish I could just chant, wish I could just, you know, chant the holy name. Or you're somewhere where you can chant, but you can't let people know that you're chanting. You gotta find all kind of ways, you know, lock yourself in the room, or go to the store and stay for 2 hours or half an hour, or go to the park, you're going to walk, you're going to go exercising, but you're chanting. You got to find all kind of ways to chant. You'll be so much relishing when you can just be with somebody and you can just chant and there's no problem. So sometimes when something's taken away, then we have the train and I lock myself in the toilet. Because, you know, I couldn't get caught, you know. I'm already so obvious, but it's colors of people watching me, you know. So I'm in the communist countries where I could have been, arrested for carrying books and preaching. And so I had to be careful. And in those days, I couldn't, you know, I was so passionate. In order for me to chant, I had to be standing up, chanting, bouncing back and forth. You know? mean, imagine, you know, I'm in a public somewhere, some foreigner, and I'm just saying, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Ram. So I would just go into the bathroom, and lock, and I was chanting 42 rounds a day in those days. And so I would find ways to have blocks of time where I lock myself somewhere. And imagine you're locked in 2 or 3 hours in a funky bathroom, you know, and you're just chanting, you know. But because it was more difficult, even more, I relished the holy name. When I got a chance, just to call, you know, one mantra, I just relished it, you know, and I could just chant. And then I had a chance to be with the devotees after some months, where I could just chant without any fear of anybody watching or hearing or whatever. And sometimes people would literally knock on the bathroom, and I would just keep chanting, you know. Or I would be locked up, you know, and make them think that the toilet is broke or something, you know. And then 2 or 3 hours later, I just open it up and walk out, you know. But you know, I was relishing, and even if it was so smelly, but just the fact, you know. I mean, communist country, some places, I mean, when it comes to toilets, it's terrible. I mean, bathrooms in general. But I was just chanting, and because I was so much wanting to connect with the name, knowing it was the only thing I had, there was no Artik, there was no deity service, there was no devotees. All I had was the rounds and the books I was supposed to sell, and then I would see the devotees sometimes 3 or 4 days later. You know, we'd meet up, or we'd meet in the morning early, and then later at nighttime. So the only thing was there was the holy name. And so have much more intensity about chanting in such ways. So Krishna can make us arrangements for us. If we ask him to help us in our growth, and we grow up and we really mean it, he's going to help us more and more and more. But we're asking Krishna to help us. We're calling him, and then we're blaspheming or saying, oh, no, don't come yet. You know, not just yet. Hey, Krishna, come. No, 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 not yet. Then it won't happen. We are our greatest enemy. So Haridasa is really letting us know that the means and the ends is the same. It's just a matter of constant unfoldment. And in Kali Yuga, because everything else is so difficult, the Lord has to bring it right before us and just cover it over some and let us gradually uncover it, in that sense. ISKCON founder, Charlie Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sarabhupada Ki. So you read the next chapters, read 3 and 4. Tomorrow we'll discuss chapter 3 and 4. Today we did 1 and 2.